Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Gators Breakdown. The Gators Fan Podcast. Because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown Podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. And as the saying goes, there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation, and that is for sure the last couple of days with some coaching moves. We'll hit on that this episode, as well as some recruiting and goals for the offseason. And to help me break it all down is Neil Blackman, and you can find his work on Saturday Down South and the Florida Basketball Hour podcast, and find him on Twitter at NWBlackman. Neil, I got to finally meet you in person right after the Peach Bowl in Atlanta, but thanks for joining me on kind of short notice for this episode.
Hey, thank you for having me again, Dave. It's always good to talk about football or anything Gators related with you.
Yeah, I think when I met you in Atlanta, that was the drink I had right when I met you was probably the one that sent me over the edge.
It had been a while since Florida fans had that big a cause for celebration, I think. So
yeah.
To be forget.
Yeah. Downtown Atlanta was fun that night. Yeah. You could definitely tell Gator Nation was excited, and lots to be excited for, even though with these coaching changes.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, before we get started, remember, you can find Gators Breakdown on news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. You'll find all the Gators Breakdown episodes, as well as articles pertaining to Gators, the Jaguars, all local Jacksonville sports by the News4Jax sports team. Also catch Gators Breakdown on iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, Spotify. When using those services, please share, rate, and review the show, and follow us on social media on Twitter and Facebook at Gators Breakdown. So, of course, the biggest news, we'll start on the latest coaching change. Quarterback coach Charlton Warden leaving Florida for SEC East and big-time rival Georgia for the defensive back coaching position there. So, of course, Will, the big story, or Neil, the big story is the timing of it all. That and so let's go through it before we get there. We heard the rumor last week, as Football Scoop reported, that Georgia would have interest in Warren. That came out while cornerback target Kyer Elam was taking his official visit to Florida. So we all just kind of assumed it was Kirby Smart putting that out there. And we know Elam and his family probably wasn't the biggest fan of Georgia defensive coordinator Mel Tucker leaving Georgia. So, you know, initially Warren turns down the job from Georgia, recruiting for Florida all week long, including an in-home with Elam again on Thursday night. Well, then something happened late in the week where Warren ends up accepting the Georgia offer. It gets announced on Saturday that Warren is the new defensive backs coach at Georgia. So now here we are. Look, I don't really blame Warren for accepting the position. He probably wasn't going to get at Florida. That position that he got at Georgia wasn't available at Florida. Don't know if it was going to become available at Florida. You know, Ron English coaches safeties. And the chance to become a defensive backs coach with more money, go back to where he's from at Georgia, be closer to his family, just too much to pass up. But I do believe it was a calculated move as far as timing and the announcement from Kirby Smart. Now, I'm not mad about it. Believe me, I'd love if Florida did it, the reversal. If Florida did this, I'd be jumping up and down that, hey, we got one on Georgia like this. But, you know, can it be labeled a dirty move? Maybe, sure. But, you know, most of it's based on the timing of it all. So, but that's the world of college football right now. So, Will or Neil, it's just, more than likely, what ticked off Gator fans most was just the timing of it all.
Yeah, I mean, I think you summarized it pretty well, and I think look, it seems pretty clear that if this involves some sort of sit down with Kirby, that probably happened when Kirby was in state to see Gervin Dexter. That happened earlier in the week. A lot of people saw the helicopter video and all that, and then Gervin Dexter with the quick tweets about being solid as a wall and all that stuff. Well, you know, maybe he wasn't going to land Gervin Dexter or flip him right now, but he obviously went back to work on Charlton Warren and got the guy he wanted. And I think, you know, I think your aspect, the way that you're viewing it, I think is the right way. I mean, this is the business. What they say in The Godfather, this is the business we have chosen. And it's kind of, that's where we are right now. That's the universe that Nick Saban has built and that everybody is after and pursuing. And I think I wasn't the only person who wrote an article after Georgia lost the Sugar Bowl and lost 60% of its offensive production that said the optics at least were trending away from Georgia and the last month. And I think Kirby Smart wanted to do stuff this week that kind of flipped that script, and certainly hiring Charlton Warren away from the team who is part of the reason the optics are trending away from you on a weekend when your biggest head-to-head guy recruiting wise is in town. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think that's a big splash for Georgia to make, and that's the way Kirby operates.
Yeah, and in Kirby's announcement, he says, quote, "Charlton is from Atlanta and has a wide range of experience coaching defensive football at several universities and conferences around the country. His entire coaching career has been on the defensive side of the ball and especially defensive backs. He has developed an outstanding record and reputation in the coaching profession, and he'll bring great knowledge and energy to our staff." So, Neil, you know, Tennessee last year, Florida this past year, and now Georgia. He's hitting all the big-time SEC East traditional schools here. So, you know, kind of hopping around a little bit, but this one might be out there for a little while. But, you know, as a coach, I think it's hard to measure the effect Warren had as a coach, only being here one season. You know, not saying he was a bad coach or a good coach, but I think the defense was going to take a step forward, a step up overall, you know, especially the natural progression of the defensive backs getting a year older. Henderson and Wilson were coming off their freshman seasons. Henderson, great this past season while Wilson went down with an injury. You know, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, if you want to throw him in there, all over the field. And I don't think Warren had much input on how they were going to use Chauncey Gardner-Johnson and where they lined him up this year. We saw Trey Dean come on as a true freshman, and the unit was playing well. You know, starting at about the second half of the South Carolina game after the bumps of the Georgia game and the Missouri game, kind of really after the second half of that South Carolina game from the season on, you know, really lived up to the billing that we knew DBU to be. So as far as the coaching aspect, you don't want to make it sound like sour grapes and Charlton Warren, oh, he wasn't that good of a coach, let him go to Georgia. That's not what I mean. It's just one season. I think it's really hard to measure how important he really was.
Yeah, I think that's fair. He's a very good football coach. And I think anybody who saw CJ Henderson kind of progress from a freshman all-SEC player to somebody that should have been an All-American, at least in my opinion, you know, really played well enough to be a consensus All-American and wasn't, will certainly be a preseason consensus All-American next year. And I think he should get credit for that and for the development of Trey Dean. But the Trey Dean situation is pretty interesting. Not because Trey and Marco took the same shot at Warren on Twitter last night. I don't care about that. Yeah. In fact, I thought that was kind of a nothing burger. That it's like, what are they supposed to say? You know, but Trey, interesting comments from Trey Dean came after the Peach Bowl to Nick De La Torre, who when he said Florida wasn't even in my top 20, and then isolated Mullen and Grantham as the reason that he had decided to come to Florida. So I think, yeah, and then your point about Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, I think, is well taken. I do think that this staff made Chauncey, a much better, or helped make Chauncey a much better tackler along with Chauncey's hard work. But yeah, I mean, I think he was kind of one of the classic Grantham pieces that Todd in his career has always been one of the best people in football at putting players in a position to succeed. Now, I think that's his bigger advantage with him than any sort of schematic advantage he offers, if that makes sense. Like, he's very good at dialing up exotic blitzes, but a lot of that is because he knows which players to blitz. He knows, you know, so he identifies players' strengths really well, and I think capitalizes on what they do. So anyway, you know, without rambling too much, Charlton Warren's a good coach. Doesn't mean that this is like a devastating loss to Florida's coaching staff. In the sense that, say, a C-Rob would be.
Right. Exactly. So part of it, another reason this move stung a little bit, Neil, because it was coming on the heels of defensive line coach Sal Cenceri leaving for Alabama just the day before. Now, this was one we kind of heard whispers about for a few weeks as a possibility, not necessarily him going to Alabama, but maybe him going somewhere. So, you know, I thought he came in last season and was an impact on the recruiting trail in the first cycle that they were going on. Malik Langham really comes to mind there. But, you know, not necessarily that way this past cycle. You know, his coaching up front was definitely noticeable. Much like with Warren, I do think it's hard to really put a measurement on Sal's effect. But the numbers are obvious if you want to point to those 11 forced fumbles for the Gators up front, registered 37 tackles or 37 sacks in this past season. Jakapa Light was a force. But we've seen that type of, like you were saying, we've seen that type of player in the Todd Grantham defense before. So it's not you know, to say, label the defensive front and Jakai Polite's success solely on Sal, I think would be, you know, I don't think we'd be fair to Grantham. So I don't want to make it sound like pettiness again as far as these coaches' input and effect on the team. But I do think, as you mentioned, I was going to wrap it up that way too. It's more to me Todd Grantham's defense. And instead of giving these individual coaches a lot of the kudos for the way these players turned out.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are things, if you were going to nitpick with Florida's defensive line, you might say that Florida's defensive tackles didn't develop that well this season. Now, certainly, I thought they played really well in the Peach Bowl, which was nice to see. But you're right.
We came into the season thinking Conliff and Slayton were going to be these big-time stalwarts in the middle, and whether Sal identified or Grantham identified those guys early, it never really panned out that way, and it ended up being Campbell and Shuler.
And Clark, right.
And Clark, as the year went on, that those ended up being the guys.
Yeah, and, so in that respect, maybe, you know, I don't want to take anything. Maybe it's easy to coach 96, 92, and 99, right? and then the other thing with Cenceri is he had a parent pass away. His son just took a job at Alabama. So you combine those things with the fact that, you know, if you pull him up on Wikipedia, he's a journeyman. I mean, his longest stay anywhere was several years with John Fox and the Panthers. So he did six seasons in Carolina. Otherwise it's like 2 years here, 3 years there, one year there, you know? So that's what Sal does. That's what he's done here. And I think Florida has a chance to make a comparable hire. I do think one that might not make message board people happy is a thought on that is, if I had a hot take on the Cenceri thing, I would say don't go recruiter heavy on your DL hire. Make sure it's a sound football coach and technique guy.
Hopefully both.
Yeah. Well, no doubt. I mean, and it's possible to have both, but it's got to be one or the other. Make sure you develop the guys that are on campus because you got a young front outside of Zoo.
Yeah, and you transitioned exactly where I was going to go next. And, hey, look, we'll see if any more openings on this staff happen in the next week or so leading up to signing day, after signing day. We'll kind of see where that goes, some whispers of some more in openings out there maybe for Florida. So we'll kind of see. But, Neil, now some hot names that are out there for openings on this coaching staff. We'll start on the defensive line here. Kevin Patrick, Chris Wilson are the two hot names out there as far as his defensive line goes. I'm partial to what Patrick has done and what he's been able to do at NC State and his history in the state of Florida at South Florida. I think it's going to be very hard to pull him, get him and his family out of Raleigh. Chris Wilson, the most obvious connection since his contract wasn't renewed by the Philadelphia Eagles last week. Plenty of experience with Dan Mullen from Mississippi State and is known as a great coach and a great recruiter. Football Scoop reported Friday that Mullen has interest in bringing Wilson back on his staff. Personal favorite of mine is Charlie Partridge. I've gotten to know Charlie Partridge personally a little over the last year, 2 years. Former head coach at FAU, current defensive line coach at Pitt. There is some interest there. No discussions, but he's worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously with any of those guys, Patrick probably would be the guy that I think people would jump for joy over. I don't know. I mean, he's a Miami guy, so, you know, money talks, I guess.
Yeah.
But you better pay him his money. If you want him to come to Gainesville, he seems pretty happy with everything in Raleigh. And they've done a lot of good work at that program under that staff. Mm-hmm. So, I don't, you know.
And what he's done that defensive line too, you know, that has been definitely noticed what he's done there.
Yeah, no, it is. And Florida, you know, Florida would certainly be an upgrade for him, but maybe his family's comfortable there and you have to respect that. Wilson, you know, I don't know. I don't have any insight into what Mullen's relationship with him is, given their history, hard to say. And then, you know, yeah, Charlie Partridge would be a guy I think that Florida fans should be comfortable with. Pretty good recruiter. Certainly managed to develop players both at Wisconsin and
Arkansas, you
know,
right?
Yeah. So yeah. I think, you know, they had the chance to be the head coach at FAU and almost beat old Jimmy McElwain, but
yeah.
it started pouring rain right when FAU got the ball in overtime. And so Florida managed to get a stop.
So, oh my God!
Thank God. Smiled on the Gators that day, right?
Oh, thank God those type of games are over with. and one thing about Chris Wilson, and this kind of goes for NFL coaches too, and we'll get into it when we talk about the cornerback defensive back position opening too, is I'm a little leery of bringing NFL guys in because of the recruiting aspect. We know how important recruiting is. When you're looking at college programs, and some of those guys, when they get a taste of the NFL, they don't necessarily like going back to the college and having to recruit again instead of just coaching. You go to the NFL, it's identifying talent, it's getting that talent through the draft, free agency, but other people are taking care of that. So, does the taste of having to go recruit again? Or not like, you know, they come back to it and don't like it. We've seen it happen before. Gators bring guys in and then they end up not really liking it, going back to the NFL. So we kind of see where it goes with that. But that's just my holdup of bringing NFL guys in.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody, every one of them is different. I think that's a reasonable concern on the recruiting front, because recruiting is. That's the sport. I mean, you know, it's recruit or die. Florida, very, very close to signing its first top 10 class in what I knew in my column. It's 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you know, if you're in your 30s like me or younger, that's mind-boggling to you. Right? Like, you just haven't existed in a universe where that's ever been something that you could say. So.
More had to worry about, but,
yeah,
but here we are.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, you want to make sure you get a guy that I think somewhat youthful is helpful, or super accomplished to the point where they ain't got to recruit quite as hard. Right. I mean,
no.
I think that's kind of almost where John Hevesy is now too, in a way that a lot of us, myself included, didn't think about when they brought him back, because we're like, oh no, Hevesy doesn't recruit. And it's like, well, you know, Pittsburgh Pouncey is going to Canton. Yeah. Another couple guys that he's coached are making Pro Bowls pretty consistently. Like, how hard is it to sell any of that?
Right.
Hey, you come play for me, I'll develop you.
Yeah.
You know, pour me another beer. So.
Hey, you get them, I'll pour them for you.
Yeah. There we go.
All right, so let's move to some more openings. And, of course, the defensive back, cornerback position here. The popular names there are recently let go. Atlanta Falcons defensive coordinator and former Gator Marquand Manuel has connections down in South Florida areas. And also former Gator Kewan Ratliff getting his name thrown out there as well. Another name on hot boards is former Gators defensive back coach Corey Bell, who is at Central Florida now. but was on the Gator staff for the 2017 season. The last season there, Chad Wilson had a funny quip about that on Twitter. The father of Quincy and Marco Wilson, quote, should have never let Corey Bell go, frankly. That's what he says when Charlton Warren left. So we kind of see what they at least you kind of know what a player's father, current player on the team thinks, and someone who knows the game as well as Wilson does. So, that's his thought about Bell. You know, Bell does make a lot of sense as long as there's no hard feelings between him and Mullen because of not retaining him last season. I talked to someone this morning who's been close to the Florida program in the last couple seasons about this whole situation, and non-solicited. They believe Bell is a candidate that makes the most sense gives the reason that he knows the kids on the team. He says the kids love him as a South Florida presence, can coach, can recruit. He says it's a no-brainer. He says also that Bell was on Georgia's short list for their opening that Charlton Warren got. So now I have been also told there is a worry that he has, quote, obvious bias against players not from the state of Florida, and some players and their families weren't too sad when he was not retained by Mullen. So now I know that was a big deterrent from the way Randy Shannon did things and his bias towards especially South Florida kids. I for one don't think Mullen and Grantham are this way. The best players will play. Bell was big in parts in recruitments of Frank Ladson, Tyreek Stevenson, Pat Surtain, Devon Wilson, some of the Buford and Grayson kids out of Georgia in his short stint here. It would be kind of interesting if, hey, maybe Charlie Partridge and Corey Bell are reunited as they coach together at FAU. That would just be a kind of a side part of the story here. So that's kind of the names that are on the board, what I know and what was brought to my attention about Bell. But Neil, you've had some insight on the probably the biggest name out there that fans really want to see, and that's former Gator Marquand Manuel.
Yeah, and since we spoke about it, I've been able to talk to a couple people. I think that there's obviously sort of Pat Dooley tweeted, mm-hmm. we all saw it, groundswell support for Marquand Manuel. I can say, exclusive to Gators Breakdown that there is interest on the Manuel side. And that's through multiple sources. That's through people that I trust, and I'm comfortable saying that. I cannot say exclusive to Gators Breakdown that's mutual interest between the Florida coaching staff and Manuel. But I think I can say definitively that if Florida called, Marquand would listen. I think you'd probably have to structure it very carefully. You'd probably need, if you were going to make him cornerbacks coach, you'd probably also have to make him associate head coach, and then put a price tag on that. Now that creates a couple different issues. One is Todd Grantham cool with all that? I think he would be, because
you read my mind on that one.
Yeah. I think Todd would be fine with all that. I really do. Todd Grantham wants to win football games. The guy's a football junkie and he hates losing. So if he can bring in Marquand Manuel with his Super Bowl ring and all that NFL experience and program experience, and Marquand can go and sell this program and homes in South Florida and across the country and say, hey, here's the guys I coached that are Pro Bowl, and here's the time I had when I was a player in Florida playing on, one of the best Florida teams ever, whatever. I think all that is useful. The question I think is he comfortable with just a position coach type role? Because they're not going to co-DC him.
Right.
That I don't know if Grantham would be cool with. I don't think Grantham cares if he's associate head coach just to have that label. And then I think, then it becomes soul searching time for Marquand too, because he has been a defensive coordinator on a very successful team in the NFL. 12 months ago, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. I remember seeing people tossing out his names on message boards, like wishful thinking about last year. Like, we bring in Marquand as DC before they knew Grantham was coming. And I was like, Marquand's getting ready for a playoff game. Yeah. And they almost won the Super Bowl the year before. So I think Marquand wants to be a head coach in the National Football League. And I don't know if you go back to Florida, you know, is he okay with thinking I can become a head coach collegiately? Will a big program give me the keys to that sort of pro, you know, give me the keys to their program? So there's a lot to think about on both sides. But as I said earlier, my position is this is the business we've chosen. You call him and you make him tell you no.
Yeah, and I think the risk is worth it, you know, from looking at it. I guess I'll play devil's advocate, but I think it's worth the risk is, hey, look, and this is Florida. It's a big-time football program. It's going to happen with a lot of guys you bring in. Does he bolt after a year or two? But, you know, what kind of production do you get out of him in that year or two? Does he have some kind of Dan Quinn effect? And we remember the Dan Quinn defenses under Will Muschamp. If we get that type of production out of him, absolutely. It's worth every bit of it. So, you know, you don't want a rotation of coaches. And I know we felt good about this staff as of about a week ago. And then here we go, Friday, Saturday, we're losing two coaches. But that is the business of it right now. It happens. I mean, Saban goes through assistants like crazy, and Georgia just lost a ton. And now Florida's just lost too. It's the nature of the business. I don't think it sends bad signs if you're rotating guys in and out. As long as you got Mullen on the offense is taken care of. And Grantham, whether he leaves to go somewhere one day or not, I don't think it's anytime soon. So I think you're kind of set there. But you're going to go through assistants.
Well, I think that's one thing about Grantham is kind of in that tweener stage of life where he kind of has to decide if he's a lifelong right. DC, a John Chavis, or is he a guy that eventually wants to be a head coach? And I don't know Todd well enough to know the answer to that question.
Am I right? Before we go on, didn't he interview for the Mississippi State job when Mullen left?
He did. Right. He did. Yeah. So, I mean, I think he's open to it in the right circumstance. It's just another reason that a manual type offer makes sense, because if Todd Grantham left, it's a pretty seamless transition to go to Marquand, who basically played a pretty similar defense in Atlanta. And this year they had so many injuries in the back end of their defense that they really weren't able to blitz the way that he likes and play the type of aggressive style he likes. The other thing I'd say about Marquand is this isn't like some guy that, and I'm not disrespecting any Florida Gator football alumnus, but this isn't a guy that came and made four tackles while on scholarship for 4 years. This is all American, right? So, yeah. I mean, or an all SEC player who was captain.
Favorite traditions we were talking about behind the scenes, the jumping on the team huddle before the game. And I'm going to tell you, that was hype back in the day. You get they get through with warmups and the team gets together. And then one player, you see him kind of dangle out there by themselves and all of a sudden just run up and get vaulted up by their teammates and sit there and hyping them up. You know, I missed that. And I think you said it's probably been since Major Wright.
Major Wright was the last one. And Quan is from that long line of nasty Florida safeties, that tradition that really starts with Lewis Oliver in the 80s and goes on to Jarvis Williams and into Lawrence Wright and then to Marquand. And so there's a lot of tradition and a lot of passion for the program there.
Yeah. I know a lot of people bring up the whole being fired from Atlanta, but more than likely, and we discussed it behind the scenes too, scapegoat for Dan Quinn there. Something was going to have to happen to show that changes will be made. Unfortunately for Manuel, that it's him being the scapegoat more than likely for Dan Quinn and the Falcons.
Yeah, there was some reporting that was done at The Athletic also that indicated that Marquand had been offered a demotion with the Falcons and wasn't comfortable with a demotion with the Falcons. Now, you might say, well, if he wasn't comfortable with the Falcons, why would he take the DB job at Florida? I think those things are totally different.
It's like,
you can stay on staff, but you can't be the coordinator anymore. It's a little more insulting than asking someone – become coach defensive backs at their alma mater while being named associate head coach.
Right. There's some self-respect in play there.
Yeah. It's a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah. Neil, some other names to watch for: Torian Gray, who was just released by the Redskins, and also Redskins assistant DB coach James Rowe. We all remember Gray's 1 year stint at Florida 2016. Rowe was on Florida staff in 2015 as a grad assistant, helped develop Vernon Hargraves, Marcus May, Tease Tabor, from Cocoa, Florida. He was also in on bringing Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, offensive lineman Juwan Taylor, after leaving Florida in one season, went on to be the defensive coordinator at Valdosta State in 2016, and then made the big jump to the Washington Redskins, who hired him as an assistant DB coach in 2017. So from defensive coordinator at Valdosta State all the way to the NFL and the Redskins, that's kind of odd, but I guess they showed enough there. And Coach Tyrone on Twitter also mentions Roe was contacted by Georgia a few days ago for their opening as well. So two other names to watch out there when we look at it. So I did find it interesting that the coaches with no prior history with Mullen are the two that have left so far. And I believe Warren was the last hire made. If I hear him or English were the last hire made the last year for Mullen. So it'll be interesting to see the route Mullen goes with these hires and see if he tries to bring in familiarity and or some names not really on the radar.
Yeah, I mean, I think a relentless one of the two spots, probably, if you can't get a guy like Marquand Manuel that has Super Bowls and ties to the school, I mean, you maybe you do go relentless recruiter at one of the spots. I've already said I do that at DB and not on the DL spot. Of course, you want the package of both, like you said.
But your athleticism can take over a lot better at the defensive back position than it can.
With Corey Bell, I mean, the big question I'd ask is how instrumental was he in landing anybody in particular at Florida? I liked the Marco Wilson endorsement or Marco Wilson's father endorsing that coach on Twitter, I think, is a big deal because that's, as you said, that's somebody that knows football. And
relationships with his kids. I mean,
yeah,
there's trust there.
That tells me enough. Yeah. I think that to trust that, even though, you know, obviously Florida had high profile whiffs at the position, in the last couple of years too. And just so happened to eke out that CJ Henderson battle in the last, last week there. And boy, are Florida fans probably glad that they won that one.
Absolutely. And, Neil, so these coaching moves have some people in a panic, mostly because of the timing and recruiting. And earlier this week, the Gators moved up into the 24/7 Sports Composite Top 10. Only lasted a few days as Penn State grabbed Smith Vilbert, who visited Florida last week. Penn State got his commitment, and after that commitment, they jumped back into the 10th spot. But look, splitting hairs there. Two of the biggest targets for the Gators are coming off Georgia visits with Kyir Elam and Mark Anthony Richards. Both their own visits to Florida last week, so we'll see how the Warren moves affects Elam and if Coley being the new Bulldogs offensive coordinator has any bearing on Mark Anthony Richards. One thing for sure, Neil, is there's going to be a lot of Florida-Georgia battles in the coming years on the trail. It might just be as intense off the on the trail as it is on the field. That's the way it should be. But I did notice that yesterday, going through your tweets, and I noticed as well, kind of when the move was made with Warren and stuff, I think a lot of Gator fans feel this way, still cautiously optimistic about Kyir Elam still ending up a Gator.
Yeah, I think he's going to sign with Florida. I think it's about Dan Mullen, and I think it's about Todd Grantham. I think it's about his uncle Matt, and I think Florida's in a really good position there. I wrote in December before early signing day, I felt like it was the most important recruiting battle that Florida had this cycle. I know some people disagreed with that, and I understand why they did from a needs perspective.
Right.
But I think the thing that's not as talked about, other than the obvious head to head with Kirby, a guy that Kirby obviously really wants, you don't pull this stunt unless he's the top of your board. And it's cool because now we know for sure that he's the top of the board instead of just puffing everybody's chest out and saying, Kyir Elam's the top of their board. No, he is the top of their board. So now every Gator fan that asserted it, you can feel good about that. But it's also Northern Palm Beach County, which that hasn't been a real kind area for Florida since the Muschamp, handling of Robert Clark, Gerald Christian, and the elephant in the room, Jacoby Brissett. So, Elam's brother obviously played at Dwyer, where I went to school, and there's a lot of bitterness at Dwyer towards the Florida program that Mullen has gone along with in alleviating. Now, Kyrie goes to the Benjamin School and is coached by Eric Cresser, but that's because that's where his parents decided to send him academically. Had nothing to do with any problems they had with their relationships at Dwyer. And I think Kyrie choosing Florida would kind of be that turning over of a new leaf in northern Palm Beach County that could get Florida back into that Dwyer pipeline that brought them Matt Elam and produces so much high-level talent. I mean, you know, Johnny Dixon is a guy who grew up with Tebow posters in his room. And we all saw the career he had at Ohio State. So, yeah. You know, that's probably a door that Florida wants to open again.
Yeah, and Elam and Chris Steele were pretty good friends, too, in the recruiting world. Yeah, yep. And so that's another connection in the advantage of Florida there. So a little more recruiting before we get into Will's latest article on Saturday down south. DeJuan Black in the Polynesian Bowl. Hey, it came on midnight Saturday night, so we either had to catch a replay, record it, or watch it live if you wanted to stay up till 2-3 o'clock in the morning. But throughout the week, Black was one of the most active and energetic players. Practice, chased down ball carriers, flats, running sideline to sideline, guy after the quarterback, come off the edge, covered in coverage well, committed to Florida, of course. Gators would get his only visit. In the game itself, he was very aggressive, showed what he showed in practice all week, great closing speed, even admitted on Twitter that he missed some tackles early. But remember, he hasn't played a game of football since 2017. So that kind of stuff, to me, going to be expected. But, you know, he showed great instincts, great speed. And, man, did he just he just looked great in a uniform. He stood out on the field when I was looking at some of those other players, Dale, sir. I was really impressed with the size and the speed involved with some pass breakups as well. Neil, this is a versatile player that might be hard to keep off the field as a true freshman.
Yeah, I think him and Diabate, the linebacker from Auburn, are going to play quite a bit as freshmen for different reasons. I think you identify the reasons that DeJuan Black will play. He's versatile. Anybody that appreciated Voshon Joseph's game understands that there were some limitations there in pass coverage. I think Black immediately might be, you know, somebody that's capable in pass coverage, which could help. Florida needs that because we all know that the only limitation to David Reese as a football player is, you know, that he's not that fast. And so I think Florida can use that. I think with James Houston, you've got a future star, but the questions are, who are the guys that are behind those sure things? And I think Black will be certainly a factor because of his versatility, Diabate because of his ability to make the big hit, to fit run gaps, and just because he's so physically imposing already. Anybody, another guy that looks really good in a uniform, it's kind of the cliche thing to say, but, you know, you can always tell elite teams and defenses when they get off the bus, and yeah. And Black and Diabate are the two guys that kind of, if you see him on a sideline, you're like, whoa, who's that guy? So, yeah, it's exciting that that he got to play a football game. I'm sure he enjoyed that. And I love the accountability. Like, I missed some tackles. That's not good. You know, that's cool. 18-year-old kid to kind of have that that ability to be reflective is neat.
Absolutely. And the update on Charles Morris now as well. He says he will not commit until signing day. And his visits are now going to be Florida State after he eliminated Florida State last week. So he's going to visit Florida State and LSU now. FSU on the 25th and LSU February 1st. 6'4", 268-pounder, you know, visited Florida last weekend. Gators vaulted, went up to the top of his recruitment. We'll see now what happens with Sinceri going away, if that affects his recruitment. It does say Tennessee is no longer in the running. I heard Tennessee kind of – that was more of a Tennessee decision than him from what I was told there. So we'll kind of see what happens there. Was committed to Mississippi State at one time, committed to Dan Mullen there, and we'll see if he ends up at Starkville visiting too before National Signing Day. So Neil, the 71st overall prospect in the nation – coming off his Florida visit last week and now kind of still shuffling his board, and now FSU, LSU in the mix.
Yeah, I mean, I think Florida, I mean, we'd all like to see Florida sign another player at that position, and Charles Morris kind of has ratcheted up to the guy it seems most likely to land. I know I know I'm in the minority on the Nathan Pickering recruiting, but until Will Salmon of The Athletic says it's not going to happen, I'm not going to say it's not going to happen. So,
And Will's really connected with Florida and Mississippi State side.
Yeah, so, and Nathan loves Dan Mullen, and he loves Todd Grantham, and the fact that, you know, there was some news that he might be canceling visits last week, and he went out on Twitter and was like, "That's ridiculous. I'm going to go on all my visits." And to me, as long as his recruiting is open, I believe he signs with Miss State when he signs on the dotted line. So I think those are the two guys that Florida has to kind of focus on here down the stretch.
All right, one more. Chris Bogle said earlier this week he's going to visit Florida. Now that Bama is losing some of its coaching staff, we'll see if that holds true now with Sal Sinceri leaving and going to Alabama. He played in the Polynesian Bowl as well. Shows some flashes as to why he's a highly ranked target as well, and definitely why the Gators want him.
Oh, there we go. Chris Bogle, Cardinal Gibbons, South Florida kid. Just another guy that gets in and is really fast and big off the edge. To me, I think Pickering and Moore are better prospects, especially in terms of what Florida needs.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely agree there. I think you get those two, I'm completely fine. I mean, Bogle would just be on the optics, still a very nice pickup there. And if you can end up getting him, but yeah, I'll take Pickering and Moore as well. So, Neil, let's get to your latest article that people can find on Saturday Down South and some of the goals that the Gators need to hit this offseason. And first, of course, the biggest issue the Gators will face, and that is rebuilding that offensive line.
Yeah, so, I mean, I almost put it second, actually, because I trust there was this moment in the Peach Bowl where everybody was sort of walking down from the press area to the – talk to the players and get ready for the post-game press conferences. So there was probably 6 or 7 minutes ago. Chauncey hadn't taken the pick to the house yet, but they had just messed up the protection on the punt and given up the sand. And John Hevesy was just ripping the second string offensive line on the sideline, like about to throw him. And, you know, it's kind of like, well, you know, this – he knows already, like he's already in. I'm going to coach to the end of this game mode. There was no celebrating, no partying. And that's where Florida's got to be focused there from the first day of spring practice moving forward through Nick Savage's program. The TJ McCoy transfer, really no surprise. So, you know, the one spot you have a starter at is center, right? And then everything else. I think Brett Hedgie, it's safe to say we'll start at least the Miami game because you want to have that experience there. But, you know, then it's all hands on deck. You know, is Rich Goriach, does another summer, a blue chip player, highly touted guy, you know, does another summer in Nick Savage's program get him ready for the field? That's a big question. So a host of different questions on that front. I think Florida fans can expect some growing pains, which is why I said, progress isn't always linear, right? Like, you could have – Florida might have to ride its defense a little in September, which is why and those electric playmakers at receiver, if they can get the ball out, because, you know, that's – the schedule kind of sets up favorably for that, but there's going to be some growing pains up front.
I completely agree. And I do think, too, You're losing experience in guys who graduated and left early, of course. But these are guys that are coming in who get to play, who are, if you think about it, end up being more seasoned in Hevesy's and Mullen's offense because of this would be their second year instead of those guys' first year. So in the end, I agree with you. It may start off bumpy, but by the time we get mid-season to the end of season, you may see a lot of the similar play that we saw at the end of this past season, just because those guys are in tune with what Hevesy wants and what Nick Savage wants and what Dan Mullen expects in this offense. This would be their second spring going into this offense.
Yeah, and you also identify you hint at another issue, which is kind of cool, is that it's more highly touted guys with the exception of Tez Ivey. So, I mean, if you like recruiting rankings and you like stars, then you should like those things. you know, these are blue chip kids. for the most part. So that's time. That's why you sign up to play in Florida. Time to produce.
Well, I think this will probably get the loudest ovation from Gator fans. Your next goal was get Kadarius Toney 10 touches a game. So I had to go through and just kind of look at some stuff here. And his highest this season was 6 in back-to-back games versus South Carolina and Idaho. And he was really instrumental in that South Carolina game where he averaged 16.6 yards per catch on 2 catches. One of those, the 18-yard screen for a touchdown. And he also averaged 12.8 yards a carry on 4 carries versus the Gamecocks. So reversing field, showing his playmaking ability, big play waiting to happen. So I say get him involved as early as a goal, you know, can be tied to getting off to faster starts in the offense as well. Because, yes, the Gators were putting points on the board late in the season. But besides Idaho, the Gators didn't score a first quarter touchdown after the Tennessee game. So, yes, I'm nitpicking here a little bit because the Gators eventually, of course, they put points on the board. But I'd like to see some faster starts, and maybe getting Toney involved even more helps get off to faster starts in games too.
Yeah, I mean, you're not I don't think you're nitpicking at all. Florida was just absolutely destroyed by Power 5 teams in the first quarter. And I think you evaluate every part of your program when you have a good program. You're going to hear me say this on the Florida Basketball Hour a lot, right? And that's Dan Mullen, I think, has shown now two places that he knows how to evaluate a program. And that's going to be something that Florida's going to want to fix is how do they start games? It's more important how you finish them, but you can't put yourself in these holes. I thought against Georgia in particular, the way that they got in a hole and then played well for 2.5 quarters meant that dominating the game for 2.5 quarters didn't really matter because they came out so badly. You can't do that against elite teams. But as for Toney, first player since Percy Harvin to average a first down a touch for 2 consecutive seasons. There's a reason that's good, right? There's a reason you're in that kind of company. A lot of people thought that Dan Mullen didn't want to, you know, oh well, he's not utilizing him properly. And all I'll say to that is that this is the Dan Mullen who, in huge games at Florida, all you saw was 1-15. So, you know, when it was crunch time at Florida, it was 1-15. If Kadarius Toney knew the offense, he would have had the 10 touches a game. So the challenge for this staff is learning to trust him. And Dan Mullen even said that at Peach Bowl press conferences leading up to the Peach Bowl. He said, well, you know, and after the South Carolina game, he said, well, we'll run a play for him, and then it doesn't go at all like planned. And I don't think he's talking so much about human joystick as much as he's talking about, like, Kadarius doesn't necessarily execute the play. That human joystick stuff happens second level with great players, but Kadarius maybe doesn't get the concept totally right. So I think it's good that in November those touches were up at 5-6 a game in important football games for Florida after the Missouri loss, because it suggests that Kadarius is starting to understand what the staff wants him to do.
All right, your next goal too, the quarterback room. And I'm going to relate this to, hey, watch some film, watch more film. You're going to break down a season's worth of film now that you didn't have with Franks and Emory Jones last year. You know, now also you get to hone in on some skills and mechanics, things you also didn't get to concentrate on last year because you were installing the system, trying to get players up to speed. And another one I think the goal should be, no matter how good Franks is, no matter how big of a step I think he takes, yes, he should be the starter. I don't think there's any question about it. Emory Jones get some more playing time as well.
Yeah, look, Felipe Franks earned the right to start. Next season, he's going to start the Miami game, barring an injury this spring and or this summer. I think we all know that, and we should be prepared to see it. And that's great. I think you've identified exactly why I thought that this is such a cool opportunity. Is you're going to have the most talented room they've had since Newton, Tebow, Brantley, at least from a recruiting perspective.
Yeah.
You know, 2 Heisman Trophy winners and a 5-star in that one, and here 2, you know, 3 blue chip quarterbacks, 3 4-star quarterbacks in the same room. I do think that they'll start using Emory Jones pretty consistently in packages, something we saw with Dak Prescott as a sophomore. And I think eventually Dak, of course, started. But I think, you know, Another one that was interesting was to me, and I didn't put this in the article, but we've seen some recruits for 2020 talking about how they want to play with Emory Jones. I liked Emory Jones. And that's interesting because, of course, Felipe Franks is only a junior. And I know our friend Unc Silk says that he's a senior for all intents and purposes. Well, if Felipe's a senior, it's time to get in the film room and keep getting better. But credit to him, man. He, you know, a lot of kids would have retreated into a hole after that Missouri game. And Franks didn't. So I fully expect him to lead a great football team that loses to Missouri next year.
Your next goal is, you know, linebacker position. Who steps up at linebacker? And David Reese, a steady presence there with Vashawn Joseph leaving. Ventrell Miller, James Houston, definitely going to get their chance after showing some promise this year. I think they'll miss Joseph's speed. So this is why I say watch out for Amari Bruni there as well. Some there. I don't think he can play there all the time, or he may not play there all the time. Certain packages, certain looks, I think they'll move him into that position. You know, I saw and followed him playing that position a good bit the second half of the Peach Bowl.
Yeah, he said after the Peach Bowl that he thought that that's where he was going to spend a lot of time this spring. Told me that, told Nick De La Torre that. So I would look for that to happen. I think James Houston is going to be an all-SEC caliber player at Florida. I think next year you're going to start to see that happen. So I'm very optimistic about Florida at linebacker. I'm like you. I'm just trying to figure out who the guys behind Reese and Houston and Bernie some are going to be. Florida will miss Voshon's speed a lot. Mm-hmm. Grantham will miss it because it's a way to disguise blitzes, the way he would move Voshon around. Finding that guy who can get downhill. One guy that I thought people should take a close look at this spring is the other David Reese,
right?
Who had an excellent series of bowl game practices and really flew around FSU week in practice too. I think he's a guy who, if you watch any film from him with Vero Beach, just really understands football, is instinctual in getting to the ball. I'm not going to make the Jared Davis find the ball comparison, because that's not fair to David Reese, but
he could be anywhere near that. I'm all for it.
Yeah, right. But he is wonderful. Yeah. He's wonderful at finding the football. Very instinctual player. I think he could make a real big leap and play quite a bit.
Okay, and your last one, find leaders outside of LaMichael Perine. I think there's some strong candidates for leadership on this team, starting with quarterbacks Franks, of course, Ben Jefferson maybe as well. Swain and Hammond have some experience. I think the does productivity play into this a little bit? Maybe. I'm not really sure. On defense, I think it can be led by David Reese. Zuniga, plenty of experience as well. Perhaps the two corners, Marco Wilson, CJ Henderson there. So it will be interesting when SEC Media Days rolls around. You know, you kind of like to send some leaders along that. So it'd be interesting. I think P. Ryan probably will be one of them. Franks will probably be another one. You know, rolls around, you know, whoever shows up at SEC Media Days, it's kind of tied into that whole leadership thing as well. So we might get a little inkling of who the team and who Dan Mullen thinks some of the leaders are when it rolls around.
Yeah, I left out David Reese and shouldn't have. I think he's certainly a leader and has been since Florida's really bad defeat to Missouri.
Oh, yeah.
In the McElwain era, when he essentially called out the whole program. And, you know, so I think he's very well respected. It was just interesting to me, like CJ Henderson and Ciante Lewis and Iverson Clement were three of the guys who, because I asked this question after the Peach Bowl in locker room, and all three said LaMichael Perine was the guy that they'd run through a wall for. That was Clement's quote. I'd run through a wall for that guy. So,
And why wouldn't you? I mean, the Michael Perine's recruiting story of he wanted to be a Gator, paid for his own bus ride to be to Gainesville to get noticed, and got the offer, became a Gator, and what a heck of a season by him.
He just plays so hard, too. He plays hard. He practices hard. He's accountable. So, I mean, he's definitely that. And then Felipe Franks is a great guy to mention because his teammates love him. Oh. You know, You can shush the crowd. You can do all that kind of stuff. You can drive fans crazy. But if your teammate rallies, or if your teammates rally around you, that's leadership. So I think on Florida, it's finding somebody outside of David Reese defensively. That's going to be a big deal, whether it's Brad Stewart, whether it's CJ Henderson, whether, you know, Marco can focus on leadership and not just getting healthy and being himself. But, you know, because certainly his brother Quincy was a leader. So there's a lot of good candidates, but anytime you lose a CC Jefferson and a Martez Ivy, and a Ja'Kai Polite, that's a pretty big leadership vacuum to fill.
Yep. Neil, thanks for joining me here for this hour. And speaking of the Florida Basketball Hour podcast, you guys have going on. Quick blurb about the basketball team coming off a win versus Georgia, and how what everybody can expect on your next episode of your podcast.
Yeah, so I'll be breaking down the victory over Georgia. Eric Fawcett from GatorCountry.com usually joins me. We've had a bunch of other guests, but check us out. We'll try to bring some levity and some fairness to these discussions. That doesn't mean Mike White apologism. it doesn't mean that we're going to hold up the pitchforks either. I think Florida's entering a really crucial 5 to 6 game stretch here that'll define this season, starting last Saturday, but continuing Tuesday against Texas A&M, and then next weekend, a tough game at TCU.
All right. And what you got coming up for Saturday down south? I guess it's probably some more focus on the football team, right?
Yeah. So a couple things there. Going to have a recruiting feature. And then we are working on what it's like to learn from Dan Mullen piece, which I think everybody's going to enjoy. Just a day in the film room with Dan Mullen. So shout out to Gator Football for cooperating with us on that. And
very cool.
I hope you guys can look forward to seeing that in the next month or so.
All right. We'll absolutely be sharing that here from the Gators Breakdown side of things. And Neil, it was finally, like I said earlier in the episode, nice to finally meet you back in Atlanta after the Peach Bowl. Glad you could join me here. Like I said, kind of short notice. We had a lot of coaching discussion and a lot of insight here on this episode. Thanks for joining me. And I think a great episode. I think our listeners will get a whole lot out of it.
I hope so, Dan. Thank you for having me. And always a good time. Thank you.
All right, that's Neil Blackman. You can find him on Twitter, NW Blackman, and on Saturday Down South and the Florida Basketball Hour podcast. I'm the host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.